very minor thing as an excuse for his true open-mindedness and support of young students. To me, the young students are to go to that point, Samia.
I'm looking at a piece in The Nation magazine. On December 15th, Indiana University suspended Professor Abdulkader Sino, a tenured faculty member who's taught at IU for almost two decades and who, until his suspension, was the faculty advisor of the PSC. The supposed reason for the suspension: alleged mistakes in the filing of a room reservation form to support a PSC event, a scheduled public lecture by Miko Peled, an Israeli-American IDF veteran and peace activist. I mean, this is amazing. You know, Miko Peled is the son of General Peled, who, well-known in Israel, fought in 1948 and in the Six-Day War. Miko Peled was going to speak. And so the alleged mistakes led the administration to demand cancellation of the event 2 days before it was scheduled. They went forward anyway. It proceeded without a hitch until the administration claimed it was an unauthorized event and the professor suspended. Samia Halabi.
You know, my feeling is that they indict themselves with their own words when they suspend someone and they say the reason is he made a minor mistake in filling a form requesting space for the event. It is ridiculous. You don't suspend a professor for that kind of thing, and then you make you create a whole range of excuses to defend the real reason. And it's similar to my case. You know, in his case, they're accusing him of misfilling a form. In my case, they're saying they need, they're worried that this my show is a lightning rod to hostile activity against the show or discord in among the students. So it doesn't make sense to me that they suspend someone who is so highly respected by the students and beloved of the students, is unforgivable. Again, it's an indication that there is a huge gap growing between administrative layers and the government and the students, professors, workers, staff, and general population in this country. You see it very clearly. You see huge demonstrations, not only in the U.S., but all over the world. And disregard, this whole disregard of governments to what the people are asking for is in miniature form taking place at Indiana University. And it is this very thing I'm talking about, this division in the minds of administrators that they no longer owe anything to the students and to the faculty or to an open atmosphere of learning and discourse. As though disagreement, differences of opinion is a negative thing. It is a kind of attempted mind control. You know, you can only think that way and then you're okay and you can be a student. But if you want to discourse and think, see other points of view, you're not allowed. So it's very backward. Very backward.
Samia Halabi, we want to bring in another Palestinian American artist into this discussion, the artist and filmmaker Emily Jassir. She was scheduled to speak at an event in Berlin, Germany in October, but her appearance was canceled. She's the recipient of prestigious awards, including a Golden Lion at the Venice Biennale, a Prince Klaus Award from the Prince Klaus Fund in The Hague, the Hugo Boss Prize at the Guggenheim Museum. And most recently, she won an American Academy of Arts and Letters Prize and received an honorary doctorate from the National College of Art and Design in Dublin, Ireland. She's the founding director of Dar Yusuf Nasri Jassir for Art and Research in Bethlehem, where she was born. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Emily. It's very good to have you with us. Can you talk about what's happened to you, actually not here in the United States, but in Berlin, Germany?
Thank you, Amy, for having me on your show. It's really a pleasure to be here. I also just would like to begin by expressing my solidarity for Samia, and the loss of her show, but also for the curator, Elliot, because he was in Bethlehem last summer and spoke to me at length about this exhibition. So I was quite excited about it. I was slated to speak in Berlin as part of a workshop at Potsdam University. And when they canceled the talk, they wrote to me and said they were going to postpone it to a more peaceful time, or to a more peaceful point in time, which now, listening to Samia speaking about the idea of being a lightning rod, this really resonated with me. And this is one of the methodologies that is being used to actually stop us from being able to speak publicly and share our words and share our work. This is another way of doing it, is by saying, oh, we'll just do this in another peaceful time. But this is the time. This is the time when we should be speaking and having discourse across the board around the world. So I don't buy that that was the real reason. Again, we have to also take the curator into consideration and try to imagine what kind of pressure, particularly being in Germany, they must have been under. The situation in Germany, as we all know, is one of the most extreme cases of silencing Palestinians. But it's part of a larger war effort targeting Palestinian voices and intellectuals using various methodologies, including harassment, baseless smear campaigns, canceling shows, canceling talks. So it's very much part of a coordinated movement.
Amina Jassir, could you talk about some of the, there have been numerous incidents in Germany where people have been canceled for one reason or another having to do with Gaza. If you could just go through some of those people, in particular the Palestinian artists and writers.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the first incidents was Adania Shibli, who was slated to receive an award in Germany. That was within the first week of October, if I remember correctly. The list is quite extensive. My sister's film, Anne-Marie Jesser, was canceled within weeks also. I think her film was canceled. It's a film about a wedding, and it was deemed too controversial to show on German television. Candice Brights, as we all know, is another person. There's so many. The list is endless.
Well, we want to go now to a writer, a highly acclaimed writer and author, the award-winning Marcia Gessen, who was also canceled, or her award. She was to receive the Hannah Arendt Award in Bremen. We spoke to her in December, shortly after the publication of their New Yorker piece headlined In the Shadow of the Holocaust, How the Politics of Memory in Europe Obscures What We See in Israel and Gaza Today. In the essay, Gessen wrote, quote, "For the last 17 years, Gaza has been a hyper-densely populated, impoverished, walled-in compound where only a small fraction of the population had the right to leave for even a short amount of time. In other words, a ghetto. Not like the Jewish ghetto in Venice or an inner-city ghetto in America, but like a Jewish ghetto in an Eastern European country occupied by Nazi Germany," they wrote. Gessen went on to explain why the term ghetto is not commonly used to describe Gaza. Gessen said, quote, "Presumably, the more fitting term ghetto would have drawn fire for comparing the predicament of besieged Gazans to that of ghettoized Jews. It also would have given us the language to describe what is happening in Gaza now. The ghetto is being liquidated," Gessen wrote. They had been scheduled to receive the prestigious Hannah Arendt Prize in Germany, but the ceremony had to be postponed after one of the award's sponsors, the left-leaning Heinrich Böll Foundation, withdrew its support. Gessen discussed the New Yorker piece and the controversy that followed on Democracy Now! On the very day they'd been originally scheduled to receive the award in Bremen.
A large part of the article is devoted to, in fact, memory politics in Germany and the vast anti-Semitism machine, which largely targets people who are critical of Israel and, in fact, are often Jewish. This happens to be a description that fits me as well. I am Jewish. I come from a family that includes Holocaust survivors. I grew up in the Soviet Union, very much in the shadow of the Holocaust. That's where the phrase in the headline came from, is from that passage in the article itself. And I am critical of Israel. Now, the part that really offended the Heinrich Böll Foundation and the city of Bremen, and I would imagine some German public, is the part that you read out loud, which is where I make the comparison between the besieged Gaza, so Gaza before October 7th, and a Jewish ghetto in Nazi-occupied Europe. I made that comparison intentionally. It was not a, what they call here, a provocation. It was very much the point of the piece, because I think that the way that memory politics function now in Europe and in the United States, but particularly in Germany, is that their cornerstone is that you can't compare the Holocaust to anything. It is a singular event that stands outside of history. My argument is that in order to learn from history, we have to compare. Like, that actually has to be a constant exercise. We are not better people or smarter people or more educated people than the people who lived 90 years ago. The only thing that makes us different from those people is that in their imagination, the Holocaust didn't yet exist, and in ours, it does. We know that it's possible. And the way to prevent it is to be vigilant in the way that Hannah Arendt, in fact, and other Jewish thinkers who survived the Holocaust were vigilant and were, there was an entire conversation, especially in the first two decades after World War II, in which they really talked about how to recognize the signs of sliding into the darkness. And I think that we need to, and one other thing that I want to say is that our entire framework of international humanitarian law is essentially based, it all comes out of the Holocaust, as does the concept of genocide. And I argue that that framework is based on the assumption that you're always looking at war, at conflict, at violence, through the prism of the Holocaust. You always have to be asking the question of whether crimes against humanity, the definitions of which came out of the Holocaust, are occurring. And Israel has waged an incredibly successful campaign at setting its, not only setting the Holocaust outside of history, but setting itself aside from the optics of international humanitarian law. In part by weaponizing the politics of memory, the politics of the Holocaust.
That's Masha Gessen. Masha Gessen was speaking to us from Bremen, Germany. The award ceremony went from an auditorium of hundreds. They ultimately got the award in someone's backyard. Meanwhile, more than 500 global artists, filmmakers and writers and culture workers have announced a push against Germany's stance on Israel's war in Gaza, calling on artists to step back from collaborating with German state-funded associations. The campaign's backed by the French author, Nobel Prize for Literature winner Annie Ernaux, and the Palestinian poet and activist Mohammed El-Kurd. It alleges Germany has adopted, quote, McCarthyist policies that suppress freedom of expression, specifically expressions of solidarity with Palestine, unquote. We're speaking with Emily Jassir, whose speech was just canceled in Berlin, Germany. And as we wrap up with you, Emily, I wanted to know if you could comment on what's happening in your birthplace in Bethlehem. The last time we went to Bethlehem, we were interviewing two pastors there, one of them who set up Christ in the rubble, a crèche scene that showed the baby Jesus in rubble, signifying Gaza. If you can talk about that and the importance of your art as you continue.
Yeah, I will talk about that, but just to relate back to what everyone else was talking about and how you started, I think it's really important to consider the way this attempt at creating a culture of fear amongst the arts community globally and internationally is happening through these baseless smear campaigns and other and defamation, threatening people's jobs. And I mention this just because, you know, one of the things that happened to me was that there was a letter writing campaign in which every university I've ever taught at internationally, anyone that's ever given me an award, received literally a 5-page PDF claiming that I was an ISIS terrorist that supports the rape of women and the killing of babies. People who signed that art form letter, that, and many, many, many of whom were Jewish and Israeli allies that I have worked with for 25 years, also received that letter. In my case, because people know me, they've worked with me for 25 years, the letters come off as just absolutely absurd and ridiculous. But if that is happening to me, it begs the question of what is happening to younger artists, people in museums don't know receiving letters like that. And it's very targeted and very systematic. And it's something to consider also in relationship with the targeted destruction of culture in Gaza, art centers being bombed. Why would an art center be bombed? Because part of genocide is precisely silencing artists and silencing a cultural production. And I feel that was very important to say that. In Bethlehem, the situation is quite difficult, nothing compared to Gaza, of course, but we are witnessing incursions every night. It's been, you know, Bethlehem is a town that very, very much relies on visitors and tourists for its economy. So that economically, it's been a disaster. As an art center, our art center in Bethlehem promotes dance and music and art practices and making and residencies of local artists and international artists. We're doing our very best to both deal with the situation at hand, but also provide a kind of way of working with the children now who live in our neighborhood who are trying to handle the situation, both on the ground in Bethlehem, but also witnessing what's happening to Gaza.
Emily Jassir, we want to thank you for being with us. Acclaimed artist and filmmaker, born in Bethlehem, goes back and forth between Bethlehem and New York, was scheduled to speak in Berlin, Germany, her talk canceled. And Samia Halabi, renowned Palestinian visual artist, activist, educator, and scholar, whose first U.S. retrospective was abruptly canceled by Indiana University's Eskenazi Museum of Art over her support for Palestinians and criticism of Israel's bombardment of Gaza. When we come back, we'll be joined by a German-American Jewish Holocaust survivor. Samia is 87. Marion Ingram is 88. She's been standing outside the White House for months, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. Her talks in her native Hamburg, which she fled from in the Holocaust, have been canceled. Stay with us. free by Mina Sami. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We turn now to Marion Ingram. She's an 88-year-old German-American Holocaust survivor who's been protesting for months outside the White House calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. She was scheduled to speak this month at 8 different schools in her native Hamburg, Germany. She was planning to address students receiving awards recognizing their commitment to social justice activism. Then, in December, she was told by an event organizer that her appearances were canceled. The trip was eventually postponed until May.
Marion Ingram is author of The Hands of War, A Tale of Endurance and Hope from a Survivor of the Holocaust, and also the book The Hands of Peace, A Holocaust Survivor's Fight for Civil Rights in the American South. She's joining us from Washington, D.C. Marion, I'm sorry you had to leave the studio because there was an alarm in the building and everyone had to evacuate. But you're back now, and you have heard the previous guests, two Palestinian-American esteemed artists talking about having been canceled, like you, Samia Halabi by Indiana University, and Emily Jassir was about to give a talk in Berlin. Talk about the reason you were given for going back to Hamburg, Germany, where you've gone a number of times to speak to young people, but the reason why your talks were canceled this month.
Good morning, Amy. Yes, a bit of excitement. I heard Samia's explanation of her cancellation. I'm really sorry about that. And missed the other because we were evacuated. The reasons for my cancellation have been extremely vague, given a climate in Germany right now of a lot of anti-Semitic events, apparently. And the only concrete explanation I got from someone was that I, as a Holocaust survivor, would be used by the AfD, which is the Alternative für Deutschland, the Alternative for Germany, which is a neo-Nazi and primarily anti-Semitic group. But they, I was told that they would use my picture and my protest sign in a propaganda I can't even figure out what kind of propaganda that would be used for, since they are basically Nazis and would be a destruction.
And the sign you're talking about is standing outside the White House. Survivor says peace, not war.
Yes, yes. But on the flip side, as it says, stop genocide in Gaza. And that has upset the powers that be, politicians who decide what can be said and what cannot be said. I have been speaking to students for years. And I was also told by several teachers that right now my presence talking to students is of the utmost importance because the schools in Hamburg are so diverse and there are many students who come from countries where there is war, oppression, poverty. And students are in really terrible positions of trying to manage what is going on, conflict with each other. And I was told that my presence is so important because I have a rapport with students and they were looking forward to expressing their thoughts because they know that in talking to me and with me that they can say everything that is on their minds without being criticized or ostracized. I find it extremely—I understand Germany's sensitivity because of their gruesome history. But Germany has also been the only country, maybe other than Rwanda, that has acknowledged its horrific history, and it has taught this history as a never again thing. We must face our history so we can learn from it. So it is surprising to me that Germany has chosen to silence me. But I think the worst part of it is that they are silencing young people who are experiencing, especially in Germany, they are close to the war in Ukraine. They are troubled by what is going on by the war in the Mideast and the horrific slaughter of innocent people. It should be an absolute standstill of all governments when you're told that over 10,000 children are being murdered. There is no excuse for that. And then to turn around, America and Germany's support of Israel's politics is extremely disturbing and, to me, frightening, because any time any government decides to silence the voices of people who oppose government policies, whatever they may be. This reminds me so much of my childhood. My childhood was spent in the first 10 years much the same way as the children of Gaza. I know exactly what they're going through. I know exactly what they're thinking. And this apparently has upset the Ministry of Culture, because I have compared the
We have
onset,
less than a minute to go, Marion.
The silencing of the last survivor of the of all three major events in Hamburg, the firestorm, the burst bombing in the European war, and the Holocaust, where I lost almost all of my family. And the silencing of voices like all of our voices when they are most needed is is indicative of something more frightening, because I believe when governments decide to silence voices in opposition to the stance that they are taking, then we have to really question very deeply why are they doing it and for
Marion
what
Ingram,
reason?
We're going to have to leave it there, but we thank you so much for being with us. 88-year-old Jewish-German Holocaust survivor has been protesting, calling for Biden to support a Gaza ceasefire.